What up, you big goobers, you big jabronis? Welcome back to the Weekend Sports Wrap Podcast. It's a pleasure to be sitting in the chair once again. We're here. I just missed last week. I apologize. No excuse. You know, just missed. I apologize. Okay. It's just, it's, you know, one of those, it just happens, you know, post football season. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to kind of get into and whatnot. And last week I just missed. I apologize. Okay. But here we are now. We're back in the chair. We're talking some sports. We do have some football to talk about. We're going to talk some football. I want to talk some boxing. Talk a little bit about some boxing a little bit. We're going to talk some, what else we got here? We're going to talk some other stuff as well. Maybe a little bit of basketball, a trend that I'm latching on to that I like a lot. But first, ladies and gentlemen, you come to the Weekend Sports Wrap Podcast for sports, understandable. But you know what we're going to talk about first? We're going to talk about a little bit about the biggest night in movies, in TV, well, mainly movies, but in entertainment was last night, Sunday. For, as of recording this, 2 days for you, probably, if you're listening to this on Tuesday. 1 day ago for me, it was Oscars. It was Oscars night 2024 on Sunday. Lots of big winners. Lots of expected winners, I will say. Oppenheimer pretty much sweeped every category it was in, which was expected. I liked Oppenheimer a lot. It's a Christopher Nolan movie. I don't think, other than Tenet, I don't love Tenet as a movie. The movie is very confusing and a very difficult watch. I watched that movie for the first time on a plane a long time ago. And like, if you want to make it even harder on yourself, watch that movie on a plane, because boy, oh boy, was I lost in that movie. But still very pretty. I still think the music's very good in that movie. And Christopher Nolan does these, I mean, he loves to tell stories in very confusing and, you know, not the typical through line of, you know, beginning, middle, end. He likes to go, hey, how about we start in the middle and then go to the beginning and then go to the end. That's just kind of what he does. And he took that to a new level in Tenet. It was all sorts of backwards and forwards. Literally, you're going backwards and forwards a lot of the time. He does that again in Oppenheimer a little bit. You know, kind of a, there are multiple timelines you're kind of following until they all kind of converge into one location. And then you're following it that way. But it was a lot easier to follow in Oppenheimer, in my opinion. So it's deserving. Robert Downey Jr., a winner. Cillian Murphy, a winner for their roles in that movie. Very well deserved. Cinematography, they won for that as well. I don't know how to say their name. Hoyt Van Hoytema. I apologize. I'm probably totally brutalizing that. I apologize. But it definitely deserved it for that movie as well. I thought Killers of the Flower Moon would maybe win cinematography. I was surprised by that. But Oppenheimer, understandable. Again, a very, very good film, very good cinematography, very good directing by Christopher Nolan. Not surprising whatsoever. Also editing, one editing as well, and by Jennifer Lame. Very, very well edited film as well. I give a big tip of the old cap, tip of the old fedora, if you will, because, you know, Oppenheimer, get the fedora, you get it, for the editing in that movie, because it was very, that could not have been a very good, or a very easy film to edit, so very understandable in that one. But yeah, a huge winner, big winners in the Academy Awards in Oppenheimer. Emma Stone brings home her second Academy Award. She was actress in a leading role for Poor Things. If you have seen anything about that movie, she looks like she kills it in that movie. I haven't seen it. I'm going to be straight up with you. I haven't seen it yet. I do want to watch that movie, but it's a tough movie to kind of, you know, it's just an odd film. You know, you have to kind of be in that mood in order to watch a movie like that. And I want to watch that movie, but it is very odd. It's very strange, but she looks like she kills it in that role. So shout out to Emma Stone. She deserves, she's a fantastic actress. One of the best in the business at what she does. Still stunned, even going into last night, still stunned that we didn't see Margot Robbie get a nod for Barbie in that movie, get a nod for actress in a leading role for Barbie. That blew my mind. I could not believe that she didn't get a nod for that. But, you know, lots of really good names in that leading role category as well. I also was surprised that they didn't give that to Lily Gladstone from Killers of the Flower Moon. I thought it was kind of hers, kind of locked, in my opinion. I thought she really had that locked up. But, you know, just not how the way the cookie, but even though, you know, Lily Gladstone, she's fantastic. She's going to get a ton of roles because of her work in Killers of the Flower Moon, and she deserves it. She's a fantastic actress. I wish we had seen her a lot earlier on, you know, and gotten more of her earlier in her career, even though she's going to probably do fantastic things here on here out. So congratulations to the winners, all the winners, fantastic winners. Shout out to all of them. I love seeing, let me be completely upfront and honest with you. I don't watch the Academy Awards. I don't love award shows in general. I think they're just kind of very over the top and way too long. And this is every award show. Every single award show is way too long. I think a lot of these, and I understand that they're also like a celebration of the previous year of movies. They're not just handing out awards. I get that. But it's more for the, it feels like it's more for the people in the audience than it is for the audience that's actually watching, if that makes sense. And that can get a little old after you hit about the hour and a half mark. So, you know, when these award shows go on for 3 hours and whatnot, they really just kind of drag on at that point. So, but you know, I like looking at the Academy Award winners. It is the most prestigious award in movies, in film, and I am a big film guy. I love watching movies, so I love seeing these awards be handed out every single year, even if I'm not actually watching the actual award show. I do think a lot of these are very important, and they're very cool to see, and they actually give you like a good idea what you could be, you know, you should be watching, like animated short films, live action short films, and whatnot. That sort of, you know, there's plenty of these areas that I don't think get enough credit necessarily, or enough eyes on, if you will. And I think the Oscars, for the most part, the Academy Awards does a decent job of doing that. There are some misses, like I think for the most part, a lot of horror movies, a lot of comedy movies, a lot of animated movies as well, don't get enough credit for what they are. I think they get, you know, like Best Animated Feature kind of gets its own section. And it is very, very rare that you'll see animated movies of any kind be nominated for Best Picture and not just animated feature film or whatnot. And that's kind of silly, because we've had a lot of really, really good. The only time they've ever been not, there's only been three times that animated films have been nominated for Best Picture as well as Best Animated Feature. And that was Toy Story 3 in 2010, Up in 2009, and 1991 for Beauty and the Beast. And to think that those are the only three that we've ever seen for animated feature to be nominated for Best Picture is that's crazy. That's truly crazy. We've had some incredible animated features, not even just recently, but I would say, you know, the past 20 years. Think of all the amazing Pixar movies that have come out, the amazing Disney movies that have come out. And just because they're necessarily maybe marketed toward children, they're not necessarily just for children. Think of Ratatouille. Think of The Incredibles. Think of Finding Nemo. Think of Wall-E. I mean, all these really, really good Pixar, Disney movies that didn't necessarily get the look at for Best Picture, because mainly it felt like they were just animated movies and they were kind of framed or marketed towards children. And that kind of happened. And this one that happened this year was not necessarily that, but like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is one of the best movies I saw the entire last year. One of the prettiest movies I've ever seen. And one of the better movies I saw the past year was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It didn't win animated feature film. It was a Miyazaki movie, The Boy and the Heron, which if you're familiar with Hayao Miyazaki, that makes a lot of sense. I'm not taking anything away from Miyazaki. I haven't seen The Boy and the Heron, but that is, you know, Miyazaki is one of the most brilliant minds in all of Japanese filmmaking, in all of filmmaking, period. And he has made plenty of very, very good animated films that maybe don't get a lot of attention on this side of the world, but should be nominated for, you know, Best Animated Feature Film as well as Best Picture. I don't know what you would take out of the category that we have there right now. I haven't seen all of the Best Picture movies either, but I think there are, you know, I think that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was good enough to be nominated for Best Picture. And you can ask anybody that question. People that don't necessarily love superhero movies, because I'm not a huge, like, I watched a lot of the Avengers Saga Marvel movies, but I'm not necessarily a huge superhero buff. Like, I haven't watched very many of the superhero movies, the Marvel movies post Avengers. I think I've seen two or three of them. And I would say that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is probably, and it's not even connected to the Marvel Universe, it's probably one of the best movies to come out of that grouping. And it's an animated movie, if not the best. So I don't know. Animated film in general doesn't get as enough of a respect as it should from the Academy. And I hope as time goes on that we see that change a little bit. I think I hope we see more animated feature films get Best Picture nods and whatnot. Because, you know, we've had really, really good animated movies come out over the last few years. And even in the last 20 years, like I said, WALL-E, Ratatouille, you know, you can go down the list. And when those are just a couple of them. But, you know, even in the last few years, like you look at Encanto, Soul, the first Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse movie, Toy Story 4 in 2019. I mean, and those are just winners. Isle of Dogs is another one. A Wes Anderson movie that's very good. The second Incredibles movie. I mean, there's a lot of these animated films that are just getting nominated for Best Animated Feature Film that could absolutely be nominated for Best Picture with how good they are and good at connecting. That's one of the things that animated films do very well is connecting the children aspect of it to the parent aspect of it and having that mold into a great, a perfect mixture. You won't find a better movie at doing that, in my opinion, than, say, The Incredibles. Like, parents can relate to that movie as much as children can relate to that movie, and it is a perfect combination. And those are the great things that animated feature films and just, children's films in general are able to do. Those are the great films that are able to do that. And animated films have a lot of that. There's a ton of those movies that come out of the animated section. I just wish we saw more of them, in animated feature film. I'm not bashing just that award. Yeah, it's a great award. But they could receive higher honors, in my opinion, and deserve to receive higher honors and nominations like Best Picture and whatnot. So anyways, animated films, they're great. They're awesome. Love animated film. I wish it got a tiny bit more respect from the old Academy that brings up the awards. And, you know, again, Academy Awards are not the end all be all, obviously, of award season. It's just the biggest. It is the biggest. You will get jobs because of what you put together and what sort of stuff gets nominated by the Academy Awards. You will see more directors get jobs because of what they do at the Academy Awards. You'll see more actors and actresses get jobs because of what happens at the Academy Awards. So it just means more, I guess, is what I would say at the Academy Awards than really any other award show. So yeah, Academy Awards. It happened. It was good. And if you haven't seen Oppenheimer yet, go see it. If you haven't seen any of these movies yet, go see them. I still have a couple I really want to see. I want to see Anatomy of a Fall. I haven't watched that yet. The Zone of Interest looks very good, but that looks like a tearjerker or one that's going to make me very depressed. I don't know if I want to jump into that necessarily, but you know, I haven't seen The Holdovers either. I haven't seen a lot of these movies, to be honest with you. And I need to catch up on a lot of these 2023 movies. But anyways, yeah, Oppenheimer, big old winner. Let's talk some sports. Hey, you guys are here for sports, right? Let's talk some sports. Let's actually talk some sports.
Whether it's installing a new system or taking care of what you have, there's a lot to consider when it comes to heating and cooling your home or small business, and that's where Alpine Climate Control excels. See more about the systems they install and service, and even schedule a consultation online at alpineclimatecontrol.com. You can also stop by and see their showroom with all working models of gas fireplaces, pellet stoves, pizza ovens, and more. Alpine Climate Control, just north of Sheridan College at 2705 Coffeen Avenue in Sheridan.
So we're going to start, now that we're getting into sports, we're going to start in boxing. I've mentioned my appreciation, my like for boxing. I'm newer into the combat sports, mainly boxing. I like boxing more than I like UFC. Newer into the foray into boxing. And it's a weird time to be a boxing fan, lady. It's a weird time to be a boxing fan. It is kind of a very odd spot that is hard to kind of articulate. And it feels like this has kind of been a problem for boxing over the last 5 to 10 years, possibly, where you're having a separate combat sport in UFC feel almost simplify things a little bit, if that makes sense, in terms of title matchups, in terms of, bouts and cards and whatnot. They make it incredibly simple. There's a middleweight. There's numerous weight classes, obviously, but there's not numerous belts to be won. There's one belt. You can be the middleweight champion. And in boxing, there are about 4 belts to win. There's, depending on weight classes, there's the WBC, the IBF, there's the WBF, I believe. There's just a bunch of different belts that you can win. And that makes it kind of confusing for a lot of people, me included. It is hard to understand who is fighting for what belt, which belt matters more. In that sense, there's just a bunch of different belts that can be won. There can be two champions in different weight classes. It's very odd. And then you tack on to the extra part of it that there are, I would call them more celebrity boxing matches. Jake Paul is the prime example of that. But Logan Paul went in and fought Floyd Mayweather for no belt, but it was broadcast everywhere like it was an important fight. There were prelims to that fight that actually mattered. And that happens with Jake Paul as well, where they will have prelims to those fights that actually have meaning. And then the main event or the main card of that event doesn't really do anything. It doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't really have any sort of effect on any sort of boxing rankings or anything like that. But they're touted as the main card. Imagine if the UFC had an event where they had title fights leading all the way up to the main event, but the main event was a fight between who was a popular, I really screwed this up by not thinking of this beforehand. The main event was between Joe Rogan and an actual fighter in the UFC, but there was no actual title implications to it whatsoever. It was just a random person like Joe Rogan fighting an actual UFC fighter, or better yet, a Joe Rogan fighting another boxer. Like, that's kind of what it feels like. It's very odd. And more recently, over the last week, Jake Paul and Mike Tyson announced that they will be fighting one another in Dallas at Jerry's World, AT&T Stadium, come this summer, which, okay, that's odd to me. Jake Paul is not I think he's technically a professional fighter at this point, but he's still at the very least an amateur professional. I don't think he has any, like, he's not going up against any real middleweight fighters or whatever class he's in, whatever weight class he's actually in. But he's pulling guys like Mike Tyson, who is a heavyweight champion, one of the greatest boxers of all time. And he's pulling him out of retirement. I don't know. It's not even, we are unclear if it's even it's not legalized. Legalized isn't the right word. It's sanctioned. That's the word I'm looking for. If it's even a sanctioned bout by any of the numerous boxing groups, and if it will even matter. And if that's the case, we're going to see Mike Tyson on the juice, jumping around trying to beat up Jake Paul. We also don't see the rules for this fight yet, because that'll be very interesting. I think the rules are going to be maybe sway a little bit more towards Jake Paul's way, because Mike Tyson's one of the greatest to ever do it. He's a heavyweight fighter. Don't think Jake Paul's heavyweight weight, you can get up to that point, but that's, you know, a big ask in a short amount of time. But then you see, like, Anthony Joshua, one of the best middleweight fighters in the world, or I said middleweight, excuse me, heavyweight fighters in the world, and one of the best heavyweight boxers in the world, taking on Francis Ngannou, who's another heavyweight fighter coming out of the UFC, went to the Professional Fighting League, PFL, that's what it is, the PFL, where he does mixed martial arts there, but he also does some boxing on the side. He fought Tyson Fury recently, lost in a split decision, if I remember correctly, against Tyson Fury, also one of the great heavyweight boxers in the world, if not the best. I think he's the title holder, so the best heavyweight boxer in the world, as well as Anthony Joshua over this past weekend. And it's weird to me that we're having a fight between Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou, who Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou, they're not going to win any belts off of this, but it's a fight. I don't know sanctioned. I believe it was a fight that mattered. I don't know if Francis Ngannou is not in a class or any, like, he's a heavyweight, but I don't know if he's a boxing class in as himself. If he's solidified as a boxer or anything like that. Like, if he would have beaten Tyson Fury, I don't know if he would have gotten the actual belts or anything like that. I had no idea how that worked. But in this one, neither one of them were fighting for belts. Anthony Joshua knocks out Francis Ngannou. But you know why it was confusing to me? Because it was happening at my time at 5 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. I'm just getting off of work, and I'm seeing my Twitter blow up that Francis Ngannou got knocked out by Anthony Joshua. And I was like, why is this happening on a Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. my time? 7 p.m. on the East Coast, they probably got to see it. But on the West Coast, it's 4 o'clock. A large majority of your boxing fans are watching, maybe not, well, they're not watching, but they're looking to watch big fights like this, and you're having it 4 p.m. in the afternoon on the West Coast time, and that is because, and this is a big problem in boxing in my opinion, these fights are being bought out and picked up by these multi-billionaires in Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh, and they're having these monster fights like that over in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and different places in Saudi Arabia. And so they're being broadcast in the middle of the day. And I believe Ramadan did have an effect on this as well, where the week of Ramadan starts that Sunday. So, and they're not allowed to have events like that during that the week of Ramadan. And the F1 calendar was affected from this as well. But still, having it a Friday just seems very odd. It seems like the sport of boxing is kind of just laying down to this, you know, the fact that the UFC is pulling more numbers than them. And this is like Anthony Joshua versus Francis Ngannou. I didn't even realize this was happening up until he got knocked out. I was like, oh, this was a fight that was happening this weekend. I had literally no idea. I didn't know where to find it. I had no idea where to watch it. And even when I did, if I did want to watch it, I couldn't have the time because it was 5 p.m. when the main card was happening in the afternoon on Friday when I was at work. I was just getting off of work. So who was this? I just don't understand who it was targeted for. And this could be just, you know, my American brain. I understand that it's a very prominent fight probably in Africa where for Francis Ngannou's from, the UK, obviously, where Anthony Joshua is from. But it's just odd to me that they're going over to Saudi Arabia when they have the week of Ramadan. They know that. They're not stupid. They see the calendar. They have the week of Ramadan coming up, so they can't do it on Saturday because it'll come too close to the beginning of Ramadan, which is Sunday, and they're still having that fight on the same week that Ramadan is happening. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense, and I don't understand it. And now we also have, not to mention, we have the fight with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson coming up as well. And that's one that's happening in America. It's happening on Netflix. It's not even going to pay-per-view. We haven't seen the rules for it yet. And that is probably going to pull more people than that fight between Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou did. I can almost guarantee that that fight is going to pull more people. And we don't even know what type of fight it's going to be. We don't know if it's going to be an exhibition. We don't know if it's going to be a sanctioned event. We don't know if it's going to be some weird like tag team fight between him, Logan Paul, and then Mike Tyson. I have no idea. We haven't seen the rules of this fight yet. Is Jake Paul going to be allowed to wear headgear? That is a rumor that I've seen thrown around, which would be wild. And the fact that they're going to probably sell out AT&T Stadium with a fight between a near 60-year-old man and a basically amateur boxer that has beaten no professional boxers, if my counting is correct. I believe it's zero professional boxers he has beaten. He lost to Tyson Fury's. I don't think it's his son, his cousin, maybe his nephew, and whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, but Terry Fury or something like that. He lost to him. And since then, he's just been fighting like random bouts on the back end of cards that nobody has ever heard of. And now he's just pulling Mike Tyson out. And Mike Tyson's going to take the money, obviously. Why wouldn't he? But at 6 years old, it wasn't too long ago. Like 6 months ago, we saw him walking around in a cane. I don't understand. I don't get it. Because the sport of boxing, in my opinion, deserves to have better advertised actual fights. And I'm not saying that this Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight is not going to be a real fight. But it's just something to pull cash. That's all it is. There's not any real reason to actually do it. And especially if some of the rules that have been rumored around this fight are real, it's definitely just a cash grab. Because one, I feel bad for Mike Tyson because, and granted, he probably is, you know, they're not forcing him to do this by any means, obviously. But man, Mike, just enjoy retirement, buddy. Just go open a gym or something and enjoy retirement. You don't have to be doing this, okay? You can make a lot of money in some other situation. You don't have to be coming back and fighting Roy Jones Jr., embarrassing everybody and kind of yourself in that situation as well. It's clearly a money grab. And then going and trying to fight Jake Paul as well in rules that I have not seen, but I can imagine are going to favor Jake Paul in some which way, because you're not going to throw, even at 58 years old, you're not going to throw Mike Tyson in there against some basically a kid at 27 years old who granted has some skill. I'm not saying he's a bad boxer or anything like that, but you know, an amateur boxer at the very least. He's not somebody that can go in and face a heavyweight, one of the perennial heavyweights of all time at 58 years old, no matter how well trained he is. It just cannot happen. So, and I don't get it. And then we have like a decent amount of dates coming up of good fights. We have Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia coming in Brooklyn on April 20th. And that is a fight there, that rivalry has been brewing for a while. And that is a fight that should pull numbers. But again, it's not going to pull nearly. And these are all predictions at this point. But based on what we've seen from Jake Paul in the past and what he's put together in terms of fighting group and the amount of ratings that he's pulled in, none of these fights that are coming up seemingly are going to pull the same amount of numbers between than an exhibition, I'm going to call it right now, between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. We've got, I always struggle saying this guy's name, Naoya Inoue. I apologize. He's nicknamed the Monster. He's a very, very good fighter from Japan. There's a fight in Tokyo. He's fighting Luis Neri. It's going to be 12 round. It's a defense for Inoue. It's going to be a great fight as well. That's coming May 6th. We have two really, really good fights coming basically in 2 weeks apart. And then a title fight between Vasily Lomachenko on May 11th in Perth, Australia. He's taking on George Kambosos Jr. That's a 12-round fight. And then the big one in May 18th, again in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Might happen on a Friday again. Who knows? But that's a huge fight, a monster fight between Alexander Usyk versus Tyson Fury. Undisputed heavyweight championship. It just disappoints me because that's going to be a monster fight, a huge fight, but it's happening in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. You're not going to pull a lot of viewership from that because of the location. Obviously there's not, it's still going to pull monster viewership in general, but it's not going to be as much as if you put it in London, if you put it in the Madison Square Garden in New York, if you put it in any number of places. But for some reason, I don't understand it. I don't get it. Why? And then, I kind of get it. Saudi Arabia is able to afford massive deals for these guys that is basically impossible to match from any other basically modern business in London or in New York or in any of these major markets. But it's, and I understand it's the world sport, or Las Vegas. That's another one. It's a world sport. I totally understand that. But what is it that Saudi Arabia has, or Riyadh has, for Alexander Usyk and Tyson Fury? Like, what is the pull there? I don't understand. What is the significance of having that fight in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia? I don't know. And you know what's going to happen? Jake Paul and Mike Tyson are going to fight at AT&T Stadium, and more people are going to watch that. You know why? Because one, it's happening in Dallas. It's a lot more of an attainable watch for most people in America, but also in the UK. Mexico, huge fan base there of fighters in Mexico as well. It's just an easier pull for that than it is for people watching a title fight, a heavyweight, undisputed heavyweight championship between Alexander Usyk and Tyson Fury happening in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. I don't understand. The way boxing has really, really become this, I don't want to call it gross, because these guys should be getting paid for what it is, for what they're doing. It's a sport that you don't last very long in, obviously. But the fact that it has just become so money hungry in a way, and not necessarily the fighters, obviously, but the promoters and whatnot, it's just really affected the way that I think the sport is branded and how hard it is, which is funny because I will 100% I advocate for UFC fighters and whatnot getting paid the amount of money that they absolutely deserve to get paid, which is way more than they are getting paid. But to see it just so openly go in the direction that it has is disappointing. And it's sad because, and granted, you know, that's going to be a fantastic title fight, the heavyweight championship on May 18th. It should be a very good fight. And so should a lot of the list of fights that we have coming up on these key dates and whatnot. But just to see it so openly promoted, promoter heavy, I guess, in terms of who's getting the money and how they're getting the money. It's weird. It's weird. It's odd. It just leaves me with a weird feeling. At the very least, it makes me happy that Usyk and Fury fight is going for the undisputed heavyweight championship. That at least makes it easy. That makes it very easy. But that Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney fight it's one welterweight title. It's not for all of them. It's for one of the titles, one of the four titles. For the junior welterweight title, it's not just the welterweight, it's junior welterweight. But the Ryan Garcia Devin Haney fight, it's for the WBC title. And that's just one of the four titles. And there's one winner for each belt. There's one winner for each single belt. There's a WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO. There's also the ring. I don't know how looked at the ring is, but I just go by the WA, WBC, IBF, WBO. And according to those, Devin Haney has one of them. And The other three are all split up. The WBO, Teofimo Lopez has. The IBF, Sabriel Matias has. And the WBA, Rolando Romero has. So we're not, you know, it's just so confusing. It's really weird. Imagine if in football there was the Super Bowl, but there was also the Associated Press national champ, or, you know, the Associated Press champion, or the ESPN champion, or, you know, and they were all equally solidified as champions. It's just so weird. So weird how boxing does it. It splits it up, makes it very confusing. The UFC, at the very least, they made it a lot simpler. They said, hey, guess what? There's rankings for all of these. There's champion, and then there's second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth. And then, you know, the eighth can jump in, beat the champion, and then they become champion. And then the other person slides down to any, you know, number of locations. But there's one middleweight champion. There's one welterweight champion. There's one heavyweight champion. We don't have all these listings. There's not all these listings, because that's when it becomes really confusing. And you know what? They're correct about that. That is very correct. That is, if there's many things that the UFC, I think, does not do correctly in terms of their, you know, how they treat their fighters and whatnot. But at the very least, that is something they got correct, in my opinion, in just unifying it all and making it one big list of these are the fights or these are the weight classes. And this is who the champion is. It's one guy in this weight class. He can go up a weight class. He can go down a weight class. He can still be a champion in that weight class. But then he has to make that weight, obviously. And he can be a champion in another weight class and whatnot. It just, it's so much easier to follow and not nearly as just mind numbing to pay attention to as boxing is. I do think there might still be a point in which UFC can kind of turn into that. We'll see. But, you know, boxing, man, boxing is just already turned into that. We lost, I think, a lot of what, and boxing has always kind of been that way, which I understand. But I think people started to turn towards UFC because it's always been a following of that sort of combat sport, but it's easier to bring people into UFC because of how much simpler it is. It's easier to explain to people, yeah, he could be the middleweight champion if he beats blank, and than it is in boxing if you're just having somebody come in and try to explain it to them for the first time. Yeah, he can be the WBC champion, but he's not the WBA champion. He still has to beat blank to be the middleweight WBA champion. And that, winning those two belts, doesn't make them the IBF champion. He'd have to beat blank in order to become the IBF champion. And that doesn't even mean he becomes the WBO champion. He can have all those belts and still have to beat WBO champion in order to unify all the belts. And then he's the true belt haver. But if he loses one of those, he loses that, and then he's not the unified. It's just, you understand how confusing that was? You wanted to skip right there, which is understandable. I would want to skip there too. We're done talking boxing. Okay. I apologize, but it's just, I enjoy boxing more than I enjoy the UFC. In my opinion, it's just a much more fun and, just a better watch for me, in my opinion, boxing is, but man, they just really, really make it really confusing and hard to follow, which is just frustrating. And, you know, it's part of the reason why a lot of people started moving over to the UFC, I think. So anyways, let's move on. We're going to talk some free agency in the NFL. There have been some big moves that have been happening throughout the day. We're going to talk about them here next.
Hey, Kathleen, you know how they say homegrown's always better? You know, like homegrown beef, vegetables, and eggs?
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
Well, you know that the owners of 307 Real Estate were born and raised in Wyoming. And 307 Real Estate is a Wyoming-based company, so I guess you could call us homegrown?
Yes, I would agree to that. We do know Wyoming and what we stand for: family, community, and country.
List your property with Kathleen and Jack and get it under contract. We are 307. We are Wyoming. 307 Real Estate, 307-763-1249.
Okay, so we got a couple of weeks, I guess, of NFL. No NFL. We still had the combine, so I can't even count it. But, you know, it's a full year sport. Who would have thought? Who would have thought that? There have been a ton of deals happening that happened, started over the weekend, and then started really happening today on this Monday. But the biggest one, I think, of all of them happened today, and it's Kirk Cousins. He is going to the Atlanta Falcons. He signed today. Four-year deal. I think it was, let me double check it here before I put my foot in my mouth here. But he signed a four-year, $180 million deal, which is The Atlanta Falcons, I said earlier, I guess post Super Bowl, that I think the Falcons were a very interesting team. Now that we were looking at the draft order and whatnot, they're still a pretty decent team. But man, they really believe that with their signing of Kirk Cousins, they really believe that they're a good enough team to maybe make a run. And I think Kirk Cousins does make them better, obviously, but 4 years, $180 million. I think it's $100 million guarantee as well. That puts a big tax, no pun intended, on the cap. And it'll make things very interesting. Kirk Cousins coming off of a torn Achilles. Who knows how he's going to be able to bounce back from that? That is a tough injury to come back from, no matter what position you're playing and whatever sport you're playing. And it'll be interesting to see how Kirk Cousins can bounce back from that. I don't know how well he's going to bounce back from that. I don't know how good he's going to be. But the Falcons seemingly seem to think that he's going to bounce back fine, and he's still going to be a very good quarterback. I think he, before, you know, going into this season, before he tore his Achilles, he was having a very, very good season. And I think that obviously the Falcons believe that he's going to replicate that even after tearing his Achilles. So, you know, and again, that is the Falcons team is a very interesting team. I think they have the weapons to be in a very effective offense, depending on what they do. Depending on the scheme that they sort of run, obviously, and they're going to kind of build that, obviously, around Kirk Cousins. But they have Kyle Pitts, who I think is going to be a very good tight end in this league. He just hasn't had the opportunity at that position. Drake London out wide. Bijan Robinson has proven himself to be a very good running back at that position as well. And their defense played relatively well, all things considered. I think they had some very good players on that side of the football. Jesse Bates being one of them. He had a fantastic year at the safety position, and some guys up front as well. But they have a top 10 pick in the upcoming NFL draft as well. Will be interesting. I would be expecting to see them maybe move down just a little bit as well. Maybe get some assets that way. See them move down a couple spots, and because that'll be a prime spot for maybe some quarterback selections as well. And now that they signed Kirk Cousins, they will not be looking for quarterback at that spot. They might be looking to trade back and maybe look at getting somebody else as well as some future assets in that situation as well. So, a very interesting team. I think that could be a team that could make, and again, 7-10, they had a decent record as well, but a team that could make a jump on a not so stellar NFC South division, and could end up winning that division if all goes well. Granted, it's the NFL. Nothing goes all well, but I think they have the weapons, and they were kind of missing. And I don't know if Kirk Cousins is that the piece by any means, but at the very least, that is going to make them better. At 7-10, they had some very, you know, they were not good at the quarterback position. They were not good at all at that position, and they still finished 7-10. So I think that we could see them take a pretty decent sized jump in that NFC South and possibly be looking at winning that division this season with Kirk Cousins under center, if he can stay healthy, if he can replicate a decent amount of production that he was able to do this past before he got hurt, and then the season before as well. So Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta, becoming an Atlanta Falcon. Yeah, cool to see Kirk Cousins. Love Kirk go. Big Kirk go. And then Baker Mayfield, he re-signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 3 years, $100 million. Dollars, a guy that bet on himself. I wouldn't have paid $100 million, but you know what? Whatever. Baker Mayfield, I think they're happy, obviously. The Buccaneers are happy with what they saw in Baker Mayfield over this past season. Got them to a wild card, won a game in the wild card, and beat the defending NFC champions, I guess you should say, in the Philadelphia Eagles. Kind of ransacked that team, and then moved on and kind of gave the Lions all they could handle as well. And yeah, so they're willing to make that gamble as well. And it'll be interesting to see what they are able to kind of build around Baker as well, now that their offensive coordinator is left as well for the head coaching job in Carolina. What they're able to build around Baker Mayfield, they're going to have to find somebody that really works well. That's what was good about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers team this year, is they found an offensive coordinator. They had an offensive coordinator that really was able to scheme around what made Baker Mayfield good and what it was that made him comfortable. And Liam Cohen, who is the new offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is going to have to make a scheme like that. And I think Cohen, who comes from the McVay tree, if you will, comes from the Rams, as well as he was in Kentucky last year. But in 2022, he was the offensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams. I think they might be able to scheme something up that works better for, or works well for Baker Mayfield. So it'll be interesting to see. Interesting to see. They're betting on him. They're betting on Baker. It's good to see for Baker. I'm a Baker stan. I always will be. And it's cool to see Baker getting that money, getting the pay that he deserves, in my opinion. Russell Wilson was another one. He is signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Basically, no money taken off the Steelers. Kind of a fantastic bet for the Steelers. They really don't have to pay anything. The Broncos are going to pay him a ton of money. I think it's $34, $35 million or something ridiculous like that. The Steelers are just like, hey, you know what? We'll take it if you improve. It's a perfect, an incredible value deal. If not, then again, it's only $1.2 million. And at the very least, you can teach our other quarterback, Kenny Pickett, a little bit about the position. And that is what the Steelers are hoping for. I don't think they're really losing anything. I don't think they're gaining a whole lot either, but I don't think they're losing a whole lot by having Russell Wilson on this team, especially financially. Again, $1.2 million, almost nothing. The Broncos are going to pay a substantial amount of money towards Russell Wilson this upcoming season. So big time deal there for the Steelers. I guess big time deal, a big time name at the very least. Anytime a quarterback is signed in this league, it is a big time deal. So I guess we can call it that. But yeah, we'll see if anything happens there, if any sort of big change in philosophy happens there for Russell Wilson. And if they get any better because of it, again, that should be a decent team as well. They have a good defense. But again, it's one of those situations where they're really just missing a quarterback, it feels like, and in order to be a decent or a better team, which I guess, I mean, that's a very basic statement, but you get what I'm saying. Somebody that is above average quarterback could really propel that team to being a lot better. So we'll see if Russell Wilson can kind of pull that out of his hat. We haven't seen it the last few years, but we'll see. We'll see. Again, a very good value signing for the Steelers in that situation. Saquon Barkley, running back, also, he signed with the Eagles. A very interesting signing there by the Eagles. 3-year, $37.75 million deal. Team that loves to run the football. I think this is a very, very good deal for the Eagles if Saquon Barkley can stay healthy. With how much they love to kind of mix up their run game and whatnot, the Eagles do become very predictable at times. But I think with Saquon Barkley, as good of a back as he is, I think they're going to be able to do some things that'll be very interesting at that running back position. And again, that's a team that loves to run the football in very interesting ways, kind of similar to in terms of how they do it with the Ravens. The Ravens are another team that's like that, that likes to run the football in very interesting ways, two similar styles of play in terms of what they like to do running the football. And I think they can get very interesting with Saquon Barkley in that backfield. And still a very good offensive line as well. They're losing Jason Kelce, center, who retired. But I still think a very good offensive line up front anyways. And we'll see what they're able to cook up with Saquon Barkley in the backfield as well. Josh Jacobs also signed with Green Bay. The Green Bay Packers, they signed Josh Jacobs and then release Aaron Jones. I guess get a little bit younger at that position. But still interesting to see that they are releasing Aaron Jones. I thought they would maybe be able to find a trade partner for Aaron Jones at the very least because of that fantastic game he had to at the very end of the season with Green Bay against San Francisco. It looked like he was going to propel that team as well as Jordan Love, but it really the run game was huge for that game and Aaron Jones nearly beating that 49ers team. And I thought that was going to propel him to at the very least get some sort of, maybe not an extension, but and I don't think there were ever talks for him having an extension, but maybe some sort of trade partner at the very least. I thought that that was what was going to happen if they were going to get rid of him. And no, they just release Aaron Jones. They spring in Josh Jacobs, a younger running back, obviously, and sign him to a deal. Josh Jacobs to a deal. I don't have the numbers in front of me of his deal. I can get it really quickly, though. Josh Jacobs to a 4-year, $48 million contract. Again, a decent value deal there for Josh Jacobs, in my opinion, but releasing Aaron Jones does, in my opinion, kind of hurt because if that deal does not shake out, you do not necessarily have anybody that will fall back on, and that deal just becomes something that will eat up in chunks. And Josh Jacobs as well has dealt with some injury, especially over this past season, some injury problems. So that one will be interesting as well for the Green Bay Packers. So yeah, Josh Jacobs to the Green Bay Packers. Tony Pollard, another one. He signed with the Tennessee Titans, a 3-year, $24 million deal. That would be interesting. A very disappointing season, I think, for the Dallas Cowboys from Tony Pollard. So they were just like, look, you can hit the road, old Jack. We'll see what we can get out of somebody else. And Tony Pollard, he's going to sign with the Tennessee Titans. DeAndre Swift, he's signing a 3-year, $24 million deal with the Chicago Bears. This one I did not understand. I did not like this year, this deal getting the same amount of money for DeAndre Swift as you would Tony Pollard doesn't really make any sense to me. I don't know why the Bears are doing that, but hey, it's the Bears. I don't really understand a lot of the stuff that they do, to be honest with you. But yeah, the DeAndre Swift, he is signing with the Bears for 3 years, $24 million. To think that they could have just gotten Tony Pollard, who in my opinion is a better back still, and instead getting DeAndre Swift just doesn't really, it doesn't make sense to me. But anyways, whatever. Chris Jones, another one, arguably the MVP of that Super Bowl run for the Kansas City Chiefs. He is re-signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. A huge deal for him. He got a monster deal. I got to get to it again. I don't have it in front of me, but got it now. 5-year, $158.75 million deal for Chris Jones. Very well deserved. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. I still think he is obviously good enough to make disruption happen on the interior of the defensive line, and that's a tough position to find quality players in. And he's very effective at what he does. Pass rushing, run stopping, very good defensive tackle. I think that is very well deserved for Chris Jones. And they continue he continues his career as a Kansas City Chief, looking to go back to back to back this upcoming season. So good signing for the Chiefs, in my opinion. There, a lot of money, but you know, I think he deserves it at this point. And Christian Wilkins, another big guy, another big defensive tackle. He is signing with the Raiders for 4 years, $110 million. He's coming off a couple seasons with the Miami Dolphins. He signed there to start his career, and now he is going over to the Las Vegas Raiders. Again, another good player. It'll be interesting to see what he can produce with the Las Vegas Raiders. 4 years, $110 million. Again, these interior defensive linemen, edge defenders, interior defensive linemen that can rush the passer are going to be hot commodities as the defense kind of changes. You're seeing less and less of blitz teams, you know, teams that just want edge rushers that can get there in four. And those are the numbers that are going, those are the players that are going to pull huge numbers in terms of contracts. And that is what we are seeing so far here today and in free agency. We're still waiting on some linebacker names to go. Patrick Queen is a free agent. Jordan Brooks is a free agent. Daniil Hunter, edge rusher, is still a free agent as well. Za'Darius Smith is still a free agent. Still a bunch of names there at the edge defender position. Some good offensive tackles still available. Tyron Smith, Trent Brown, Mike Onwenu as well from the Texans are a couple of names as well that are missing teams as well. So still a lot to happen in free agency market that we're still waiting to see kind of perspire. Is that the right word? Maybe perspire, come down the pipeline, if you will. We did just get one recently that Gardner Minshew, the Colts quarterback that came in for Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson got hot. The rookie quarterback got hurt. He got hurt, and then Gardner Minshew got hot and led them to a pretty good season at that quarterback position. He signed a deal with the Raiders as well. So he's going to be, I would imagine, I don't know if he's going to be their starting quarterback. Maybe he might just be their starting quarterback. Jimmy G might still be their starting quarterback. He got hurt last year, but I don't know. It's kind of all up in the air in that situation. I don't know. Interesting signing there. We will see. So a lot more names getting signed throughout the day. There's just too many coming across the screen to even keep up with, to be honest, at this point. It's free agency, ladies and gentlemen. It is free agency, and we have officially hit it. We have officially hit a free agency. Still waiting on Derrick Henry as well as another name. Austin Eckler at the running back position is another name we're waiting on. Ryan Tannehill is the name we're still waiting on as well at the quarterback position, and a bunch of other areas as well to keep track of as free agency rolls along. We get closer to the draft, and free agency is going to pick up as we get closer to the draft as well. So more names are going to come in and make some noise. So we'll see what happens with the free agency tracker as it moves along here on the offseason for the NFL. As we close, we're going to start to close things out here. I do want to touch on a trend that has been making the rounds on social media, which has made me laugh numerous times. It has made me laugh numerous times. It is called We Done With the 90s, and that is the name of the trend. And it is talking about 90s basketball, 80s and 90s basketball. It is kind of having a implosion, if you will. There are a lot of people that are finally, for some reason, are now finally seeing the full-on Michael Jordan, you know, 90s era basketball highlights, and we're kind of coming, there's people coming to the realization, this is not me, I'm not necessarily part one of these people, but I do find it really funny. They're coming to the realization that, wow, the game that we're watching today is just a lot more fun to watch, which that I can 100% agree with. The game that we're watching today is just a lot more fast-paced, a lot more, consistent in terms of shot making and whatnot. That I can 100% agree with. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with the fact that the 90s, just the version of 90s basketball, is nowhere near this version of basketball. But I do agree that I will say that I think somebody like LeBron James or any number of players that you can think of in today's modern era of basketball would dominate in the 90s. I think just in general, rule of thumb for any modern sport, any sport that you have seen start from a point in the past to today is going to improve. From 1910 to now, the game of basketball has gradually improved in the type of players and the type of play that we have seen. I don't think it capped out at the 90s and then has gradually fallen off. I think that is completely false. I think that is people just old heads holding on to the 90s basketball format. You know what I found out the other day? I found out about something called illegal defense that happened in the 80s and 90s. It was a rule that they put in place in the NBA, and it was called illegal defense. And this, to me, kind of really puts a dampening on what defenses were back in the day for the NBA. Illegal defense was a defensive maneuver in the NBA that, in layman's term, essentially says when a defender is in the paint, they must be actively guarding an opponent, meaning they are within arm's length of an offensive player and in a guarding position within 3 seconds. It essentially kind of took away the idea of zone defenses, essentially, and took the, even though a lot of the game back then was played through the paint, but you had to be near somebody in the paint. It couldn't be somebody, they couldn't have just a random defender out on the wing. You know, they couldn't have, you could double team people, obviously, because you're defending one person, but you couldn't have people in zone defenses, which is really funny because I had no idea about this rule up until 1 week ago, maybe. I had no idea that this was a rule, and the rule doesn't make a lot of sense, but it makes a lot of sense of why we saw a lot of the defense that we were seeing. Granted, again, the play was happening through from the middle out, like it wasn't out towards the middle like it is today, where a lot of offense starts from the 3-point line and works its way in. Back then, it was inside out. It would started from the block and worked its way out. It was very rare to see like a guy like Michael Jordan, who was a guard, dominate the NBA like he did. And you know, I'm not a huge proponent of the "we done with the 90s," but there is something to be said about the fact that there really isn't any other sport in the modern era that we look at quite like basketball and NBA basketball, where we see it as something that has plateaued and has consistently gotten worse since then, which to me is completely false. But there isn't any other sport that thinks like that, from former players to media members that think that way. There isn't any other sport that does that. The NFL doesn't do that. There are some maybe stragglers, but if you just look at like the comparisons in terms of speed and weight and whatnot, you can tell that the game has just gradually gotten stronger, faster, better as time has gone on. MLB, no shot. Shohei, if Babe Ruth saw Shohei Ohtani, he would quit. He would give up. He would say, "I'm not playing this game anymore. No, thank you." If any of the 90s baseball players saw Shohei Ohtani, they would say, "I'm quitting. I don't want to play no more. This is insane." That's kind of how it goes. And hockey, I think, is a lot of the same way. Wayne Gretzky is still the greatest player of all time, obviously. But again, it's a very different game than it was back then for the NHL and a lot of modern hockey. So it's just odd. It's very odd how the NBA views itself, how former players view the NBA today. You will consistently hear former players talking about today's game and how they would average blank in today's game. That is such an annoying argument because, one, you're not playing in today's game. It's such a stupid argument. You're not playing in today's game, okay? That's not how it works. Just talk about it, especially, and it's just weird from former players. And media members can make up that argument all they want because, you know, it just doesn't really hold any value, obviously. But, you know, it's just, and coming from former players, you're supposed to support the game as it has gone along. And that just doesn't happen in a lot of what we see in the NBA today. So it's just, it's odd. It makes me scratch my head whenever we see stuff like that and then what it has kind of turned into up until this point. So anyways, I just wanted to touch on that trend. I think it's very funny. People are just now all of a sudden getting their hands on like modern day or they're now getting on, getting their hands on like full game replays for some reason. And though, even though those have been available for a very long time, but they're just now getting like hands on selections from the past. So like 90s finals games. And they're like, this is what it looked like. And yeah, this is kind of what it looked like. The game is very, very quickly progressed into a spread out type of game, and changed very drastically in just 30 years time. So anyways, that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to wrap up the show for today. I want to thank you very much for tuning in. I appreciate it very much. Please remember to leave a rating is probably the proper term, a rating, 5-star rating, if you don't mind, on all of those podcasting platforms that you could be listening to this on, and drop a follow as well. We'll be back next week with more sports. So thank you very much. We appreciate it. This has been the Weekend Sports Wrap Podcast. I have been your host, James Timberlake.